Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, November 4th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, PolyMet files an official application to mine copper and nickel, a last-minute primer on the constitutional amendment on the ballot, and the Dreamers and the election. PolyMet Mining has filed a major application with state regulators to open what would be the first copper-nickel mine in northern Minnesota. The mine promises hundreds of jobs in a region desperate for an economic jolt, but it would also create new environmental risks. For the first time, the company has proposed how much money to set aside up front as assurance in case it goes out of business and the state needs to close down the mine. Dan Crocker has more.
The permit-to-mine application PolyMet turned into state regulators yesterday is more than 15,000 pages long. It details exactly how the company plans to extract and process ore near the towns of Babbitt and Hoyt Lakes in northeastern Minnesota, and how it plans to protect the surrounding environment. Much of that information was already included in the mine's environmental review, which the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources approved in March. But this permit application also details the company's so-called financial assurance plan, basically a damage deposit the company puts up front in case the company goes bankrupt and the state has to come in and close the mine. Here are the numbers. PolyMet is proposing to set aside $12 million in the first year of construction. That jumps to $44 million in year two, and then, says Vice President Brad Moore, to nearly $200 million in the first year of mine operations.
There the number jumps up significantly because then you have the water treatment plant running and you have that long-term water treatment liability as well.
The environmental review of the project predicts that long-term water treatment at the site will be required indefinitely for decades and potentially longer, even after the mine closes, at a cost of up to $6 million per year. Moore says the amount of financial assurance required will be recalculated every year.
This is done in mines across the nation in North America, so actually to calculate those numbers isn't difficult. I think the question will be making sure that the public has an input in terms of what they think of those numbers and feel comfortable when that permit, we hope, is issued at some point, that you have that social license to mine and people can be confident that the environment will be managed.
Environmental groups that have been scrutinizing PolyMet's plans are not confident the environment will be protected. Aaron Clems with Friends of the Boundary Waters Wilderness says the permit-to-mine application hasn't changed that opinion.
It remains a project that would require polluted water to be treated for decades, even centuries, after the mine closes.
Clems is also skeptical the amount of financial assurance PolyMet is proposing is sufficient.
It appears, once again, we're looking at a document that's kicking the can down the road, and we don't have a lot of the details we need to see whether or not there is sufficient damage deposit being set aside to protect Minnesota taxpayers.
PolyMet's proposing to create a trust fund to pay for long-term water treatment. It proposes to fund it initially with a mixture of cash and bonds, moving eventually to all cash. Ron Sternel, a retired investment executive who's on the board of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, says the state should insist on cash to guarantee the money will be there if needed.
Why does the state have to put itself at risk? If this is such a good deal, let their investors take the risk. Let's not have the state take the risk. Have the cash up front.
PolyMet's Moore stresses the application is a starting point. The DNR says it will take months to review the proposal. It will include a review by independent financial experts. Then it issues a draft permit. That's the point. The public gets to weigh in on the application. Nancy Knorr with the group Jobs for Minnesotans says the 360 jobs PolyMet projects may not seem like a huge number, but says that would mean a great deal to northern Minnesota.
I think copper nickel mining done in a safe and responsible manner represents a significant diversification of our mining interests and introduces really a whole new era of mining for our state.
It will still be a while before there's any new mining in the state. The company says it would take up to 2 years to build the mine if it obtains the more than 20 permits it needs and gets federal approval. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Because of all the noise around the races for president, Congress, and the state legislature, you may have missed an item on the Minnesota ballot, a move to change the state constitution. Voters will decide whether to revise the way state lawmaker pay is set. Don't worry, you're not alone if you don't know much about the proposed amendment or why it's on the ballot. Brian Baxt is here to help with this refresher.
Trivia time, and no peeking. What's the salary of your state representative and state senator?
I wouldn't even be able to guess. I would guess maybe 60 grand a year.
80,000.
I was going to say like 120.
That was Denise Johnson, Andy Sweet, Shauna Tuttle, and Chris Burnham. I sprang the question on them this week at a regional park in Plymouth. They were all off by a lot. For the record, the yearly pay for legislators is about $31,000 a year. It's been that much since 1999 for a job that's considered part-time. Lawmakers have been gun-shy about even considering a raise, and when they have tried, the attempts have fallen short. That brings us to the amendment on the ballot. It would take that pay decision out of the hands of elected legislators and give the power to a new citizen council. Andy Sweet voted early and says he was surprised to encounter the question on his ballot. He wound up voting yes.
I mean, any less power we give politicians, I think, the better. So, especially when it concerns their pay.
Sweet says he knows that means pay could go up, and he's fine with raises close to the inflation rate. Tuttle and Burnham say they would also be more comfortable leaving it to an independent board rather than having lawmakers adjust their own pay. But both said they need to study up before deciding on an issue that has flown under the radar in an otherwise acrimonious campaign year.
It's been fairly stressful. And I think I've gone off of Facebook a few times in angst.
Michael Keep of Minneapolis has already done his homework. He called me to vent about the lack of coverage the amendment is getting.
And when a low-information voter looks at the ballot and says, oh, wow, I can get rid of a lawmaker's power to give themselves pay raises, they're going to go, heck, I'm going to vote for that. But that's exactly what the lawmakers want them to do. And the way it's like booby trap for voters.
He's opposed to it for several reasons, but is especially angry about the prescribed makeup of the council. If voters adopt the amendment, a 16-member council would be appointed by January. The governor and Supreme Court Chief Justice would each pick 8 of the members. They would come from throughout the state and be split equally between those belonging to the 2 dominant political parties. Council members couldn't be current or past lawmakers, lobbyists, judges and the like, or the spouse of a sitting legislator. Keep thinks it's a terrible idea.
It creates an unaccountable committee that would do a legislative task, and this committee would be made up of card-carrying partisans where 99% of Minnesota voters would not be able to sit on that committee.
The panel would be under orders to re-examine pay levels every 2 years, deciding to leave salaries alone, raise them, or cut them. Minnesota legislators now rank 19th in base pay among the 39 states that provide an annual salary. That's according to a survey this year by the National Conference of State Legislatures. But that comparison doesn't account for the expense allowances that some, but not all, Minnesota legislators collect, up to $86 a day in the Senate and $66 per day in the House. Mankato voter Richard Hunstead said he's on board with the proposed change and the possibility of salary increases.
I guess they haven't taken a raise for quite a few years, have they? So I suppose you can't argue that.
Here's one more thing about constitutional amendments. It's not just about how many yes and no votes they get. If voters skip the question, it's counted as a vote against it. Covering politics with reporting assistance by Catherine Richard, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Nearly 6,000 young people in Minnesota are living in a special kind of limbo this election season. They're undocumented immigrants who have received temporary relief from deportation because of executive action from President Obama. Some of them have used the opportunity to attend college, but the 2-year reprieves could go away depending on the outcome of the election. Sasha Aslanian visited one campus to find out what it's like to live at the center of the immigration debate.
Julio Martinez was 8 when he and his parents and younger brother left Puebla in southern Mexico and crossed the border illegally into the United States.
I came to Minneapolis. It was in the winter, really cold, you know, like I was not dressed up properly. I had like probably sandals and shorts. I don't remember, but it was beautiful. It was my first time seeing snow and, you know, the Christmas trees, like it was just an amazing experience.
11 years later, Martinez is a student at Minneapolis Community and Technical College and one of 45 STAR Scholars, a scholarship program for undocumented students that's funded by private philanthropy. 22-year-old Estefania Navarro mentors Martinez and the other STAR Scholars. She too came from Mexico as a child and remembers getting mixed messages about planning for her future.
In middle school, we used to have this program called Get Ready. And so we would have like white college girls come into our school and talk to us great wonders about McAllister, about Gustavo. We would go on field trips. And they said, if you do your homework, you can go to college.
But it wasn't quite that simple. Undocumented students are not eligible for Pell Grants or federal loans. In recent years, some opportunities for these students have widened. In 2012, President Obama used executive action to create Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. It allows young people like Navarro and Martinez, who came to the U.S. before age 16 and who have clean records, to apply for a two-year reprieve from deportation. They can apply for work permits and driver's licenses, which can make it easier to attend college. With DACA, Martinez got an internship at Hennepin County's Office of Multicultural Services. He answers phones, translates, and helps people apply for benefits. It gave him an idea for a career.
I want to work for Hennepin County. I want to be a manager. Hopefully I'll be the chief of Hennepin County one day. But yeah, that is my plan A. And my plan B was to become an actor because I love acting.
But it's difficult for students like Martinez to make any plans with so much up in the air. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says he'd cancel DACA on day one. Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton says she'd expand it and push for comprehensive immigration reform. For Estefania Navarro, the Star Scholar's mentor, election season has been an uneasy time.
Waiting for somebody to say Mexican or illegal, like it's a profane word. And it's so tiring.
She's trying to stay focused on her goals and encourage her students to get as many credits as they can in the time they have. She's picked her course of study with an eye on what's ahead. While she wanted to study political science and someday run for office, she settled for a more pragmatic choice, computer forensics. Her dad's a computer engineer back in Mexico, and she wants skills that would make her marketable on either side of the border. Dr. Jay Williams, the interim chief diversity officer at MCTC, who began piloting the Star Scholars program last year, says the uncertainty weighs on students.
There's a lot of fear, a lot of worry about, well, if this candidate or that one wins, will we actually be, you know, rounded up and sent out of the country? And we don't have a crystal ball. And if that happens, it'll make things harder.
Minnesota is one of 20 states that allow undocumented students to pay in-state tuition and one of 5 states that also provide financial assistance. According to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, more than 750 students applied for such benefits for fall term. Sasha Eslanian, APM Reports in Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. Thank you.